Before God created civil government, He created family. Before He created even the church, God created family. Families play a vital role in training the next generation. Commit today to nurturing and supporting families, especially your own. Families that are committed to God and each other can play a vital role in transforming our churches, cities, states, and nation.
Welcome to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. And now for today's message, here's Pastor Chuck Longworth.
Tomorrow, we will be celebrating Memorial Day. Some of you may be old enough to have heard some of your elders call it Decoration Day. We'll talk more about that a little later. But there are actually three different holidays that address people in uniform, and the first of those has already been celebrated this year on the 15th of this month, Armed Forces Day. The Army used to have a separate day, and the Navy had a day, and the Air Force had a different day, and back a number of years ago, they consolidated that into Armed Forces Day. And Armed Forces Day was the 15th of this month, May. And Armed Forces Day celebrates those that are currently in uniform, those who are in the military and who are serving our country and protecting us. And then in November, we celebrate November the 11th, we celebrate Veterans Day. And that's for the people that have been in uniform, but took off their uniform because they either retired or they were discharged from the military, and so they are military veterans. But the most solemn of the three is what we celebrate tomorrow on Memorial Day, and that is the day that we honor those who never took off the uniform, who died in combat. And So we owe a great debt to those who laid down their lives that we might experience and enjoy the freedom and liberty that we have in America. There are a number of things that you may not know about Memorial Day and its traditions and its roots. While the first commemorative Memorial Day events weren't held in the United States until the late 19th century, that would be in the 1800s, of course, the practice of honoring those who had fallen in battle dates back thousands of years. The ancient Greeks and Romans held annual days of remembrance for loved ones, including soldiers, each year, festooning their graves with flowers and holding public festivals and feasts in their honor. In Athens, public funerals for fallen soldiers were held after each battle, with the remains of the dead on display for public mourning before a funeral procession took them to their internment in Karamekos, one of the city's most prestigious cemeteries. One of the first known public tributes to war dead was in 431 BC, when the Athenian general and statesman Pericles delivered a funeral oration praising the sacrifice and valor of those killed in the Peloponnesian War, a speech that some have compared in tone to Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. And most people that know anything about American history know about the Gettysburg Address. And I think it's very interesting that the fact that President Lincoln was asked to say something at that occasion when they were dedicating the cemetery, the burial grounds for Gettysburg. And Gettysburg had a great number of casualties, possibly the greatest number in the Civil War. And many of us recognize things that we're familiar with the Gettysburg Address. We recognize the things that President Lincoln had to say. But it's also interesting to note that President Lincoln was not the featured speaker on that day. There was another gentleman that spoke for almost 2 hours. And Lincoln only spoke for maybe 2 minutes or a little more than that. And his speech is remembered today. And, you know, it's interesting that he said in his speech that that people will not probably remember what was said here, but they can never forget the sacrifice of the men that died here. But the fact is, his words live on and have become probably the most memorized, the most quoted historical document or speech in American history. Then, as the Civil War neared its end, there's a particular celebration that took place, or a particular observation that we want to look at. One of the earliest commemorations was organized by recently freed African Americans. As the Civil War neared its end, thousands of Union soldiers held as prisoners of war were herded into a series of hastily assembled camps in Charleston, South Carolina. Conditions at one camp, a former racetrack near the city's citadel, was so bad that more than 250 prisoners died from disease or exposure and were buried in a mass grave behind the track's grandstand. 3 weeks after the Confederate surrender, an unusual procession entered the former camp. On May the 1st, 1865, more than 1,000 people recently freed from enslavement, accompanied by regiments of the so-called U.S. Colored Troops, including the Massachusetts 54th Infantry, and a handful of white Charlestonians, gathered in the camp to consecrate a new proper burial site for the Union dead. The group sang hymns, gave readings, and distributed flowers around the cemetery, which they dedicated to, quote, martyrs of the race course. The holidays, talking about Memorial Day, the holiday's founder had a long and distinguished career. In May 1868, General John A. Logan, the commander-in-chief of the Union Veterans Group, known as the Grand Army of the Republic, issued a decree that May the 30th should become a nationwide day of commemoration for the more than 620,000 soldiers killed in the recently ended Civil War. On Decoration Day, as Logan called it, Americans should lay flowers and decorate the graves of the war dead, whose bodies now lie in almost every city, village, and hamlet churchyard in the land, was a quote from him. According to legend, Logan chose May the 30th because it was a rare day that didn't fall on the anniversary of a Civil War battle, though some historians believe that the date was selected to ensure that flowers across the country would be in full bloom. After the war, Logan, who had served as a U.S. congressman before resigning to rejoin the Army, returned to his political career, eventually serving in both the House and the Senate, and was the unsuccessful Republican candidate for vice president in 1884. When he died 2 years later, Logan's body lay in state in the rotunda of the United States Capitol, making him just one of 33 people to have received the honor. Today, and you might remember that Billy Graham was one of those who received that honor as well, to lie in state in the rotunda of the United States Capitol. Today, Washington, D.C.'s Logan Circle, several townships across the country are named in honor of this champion of veterans and those killed in battle. Logan probably adapted the idea from earlier events in the South. Even before the war ended, women's groups across much of the South were gathering informally to decorate the graves of Confederate dead. In April 1886, the Ladies Memorial Association of Columbus, Georgia, resolved to commemorate the fallen once a year, a decision that seemed to have influenced John Logan to follow suit, according to his wife. However, Southern commentaries were rarely held on one standard day, or Southern commemorations were rarely held on one standard day, with observations differing from state to state and spread across much of the spring and early summer. It's a tradition that continues today. I might mention that my wife's family, the Smith family, I don't believe that last year in 2020 that they were able to get together because of the pandemic, but for years, they have been getting together once a year around Memorial Day, sometime in that time frame, and decorating the graves of loved ones in many of the cemeteries in Kentucky. And it was, I read in one commentary that the Appalachian states were very influential in bringing about the the format actually, and helped to usher in Decoration Day, because that they were already in Kentucky, West Virginia, Virginia, and Tennessee in particular, and it actually extended down into part of North Carolina, part of Georgia, and also northern Alabama, northern Mississippi. They were getting together informally and decorating the graves, and especially honoring those who had fallen in battle. Many times this was something that was done by some of the churches. The churches would have a particular Sunday when they went to a certain cemetery, or possibly even more than one cemetery, and laid flowers on the graves and decorated the graves. And usually this was accompanied with singing hymns and a brief service at least, and then dinner on the ground. So this was a tradition, and still is a tradition, among different families, and even with some of the churches. It's a tradition that continues today. 9 southern states officially recognized a Confederate Memorial Day, with events held on Confederate President Jefferson Davis' birthday, the day on which General Thomas Stonewall Jackson was killed, or to commemorate other symbolic events. It did not become, we're talking about, did not become a federal holiday. This was something that General Logan pushed, obviously, very strongly, but it was celebrated individually by the different states on different days. And it says America embraced the notion of Decoration Day immediately. That first year, more than 27 states held a sort of ceremony, with more than 5,000 in attendance at a ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery in 1890. But Arlington National Cemetery, by the way, there is, that's probably the best known of the national cemeteries throughout the United States. And Arlington National Cemetery is about 3.5 miles from Washington, D.C. It takes about 15 minutes to travel from Arlington Cemetery to Washington, D.C. Then every former state of the Union had adopted, and by 1890, every former state of the Union had adopted it as an official holiday. But for more than 50 years, the holiday was used to commemorate those killed just in the Civil War, not in any other American conflict. It wasn't until America's entry into World War I that the tradition was expanded to include those killed in all wars, and Memorial Day was not officially recognized nationwide until the 1970s, with America deeply embroiled in the Vietnam War. It was a long day for Decoration Day to an official Memorial Day, or a long road, rather. Although the term Memorial Day was used beginning in 1880, the holiday was officially known as Decoration Day for more than a century, when it was changed by federal law. 4 years later, the Uniform Monday Holiday Act of 1968 finally went into effect, moving Memorial Day from its traditional observance on the 30th of May, regardless of the day of the week, to a set day, the last Monday in May. The move has not been without controversy, though. Veterans groups concerned that more Americans associated the holiday with the first long weekend of the summer and not its intended purpose to honor the National War Dead continue to lobby for a return to the May 30th observations. For more than 20 years, their cause was championed by Hawaiian senator and decorated World War II veteran Daniel Inouye, who until his 2012 death reintroduced legislation in support of the change at the start of every congressional term. More than 20 towns claim to be the holiday's birthplace. For almost as long as there's been a holiday, there's been a rivalry about who celebrated it first. Boylesburg, Pennsylvania, bases its claim on an 1864 gathering of women to mourn those recently killed at Gettysburg. In Carbondale, Illinois, they're certain that they were first, thanks to an 1866 parade led in part by John Logan, who 2 years later would lead the charge for an official holiday. There are even two dueling Columbus challengers, one in Mississippi and the other in Georgia, who have battled it out on Memorial Day for Memorial Day supremacy for decades. Only one town, however, has received the official seal of approval from the U.S. government. In 1966, 100 years after the town of Waterloo, New York, shattered its businesses and took to the streets for the first, most continuous community-wide celebrations, President Lyndon Johnson signed legislation recently passed by the U.S. Congress, declared this tiny upstate village the official birthplace of Memorial Day. So that's Waterloo, New York, officially became the birthplace of Memorial Day. Wearing a red poppy on Memorial Day began with World War I, with a World War I poem. In the spring of 1915, bright red flowers began poking through the battle-ravaged land across northern France and Flanders, North Belgium. Canadian Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae, who served as a brigadier surgeon for an Allied artillery unit, spotted a cluster of poppies shortly after serving as a brigade surgeon during the bloody Second Battle of Price. The sight of the bright red flowers against the dreary backdrop of war inspired McCrae to pen the poem In Flanders Field, in which he gives voice to the soldiers who had been killed in battle and lay buried beneath the poppy-covered grounds. Later that year, a Georgia teacher and volunteer war worker named Moina Michael read the poem in Ladies' Home Journal and wrote her own poem, We Shall Keep the Faith, to begin a campaign to make the poppy a symbol of tribute to all who died in war. The poppy remains a symbol of remembrance to this day. And there have been many Memorial Day traditions that have evolved over the years. You've probably been stopped or at least somebody tried to get you to slow down and stop with handing out poppies and the paper ones that you can pin to your clothing or whatever, but that's for a donation to one of the veterans groups that I'm sure has to do with those that laid down their lives that we might experience the liberty and the freedom that we enjoy today. We started the service today with a passage, actually the 22nd chapter of Luke we read in its entirety, and then in John chapter 10 verses 17 and 18 where Jesus said, no one takes my life from me. I lay it down. I have that option. I can lay it down and I can pick it back up again. And I do it of my own choice. And the Bible tells us greater love has no man than he lay down his life for his friends. And so we thank God for the privileges, for the liberty and the freedom that we enjoy today in America. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. Now to him who is able to keep you from stumbling and to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy, to God our Savior, who alone is wise, be glory and majesty, dominion and power, both now and forever. Amen. Lord, hasten the day that the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea.
You've been listening to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Join us each Sunday morning for The Lighthouse. If you've been blessed by this broadcast, visit www.covenanttabernacle.com where you can give us feedback and make a donation.
Before God created civil government, he created family. Before he created even the church, God created family. Families play a vital role in training the next generation. Commit today to nurturing and supporting families, especially your own. Families that are committed to God and each other can play a vital role in transforming our churches, cities, states, and nations.